welcome to another of our podcasts recorded at the Paris School of Economics CEPR Policy Forum 2026. I'm Tim Phillips. Has trade become an instrument of power? Yeah, if so, when a country cuts trade to protect itself, does it end up safer? Isabelle Méjean of Sciences Po and CEPR, she's also a member of the Research Policy Network on Geoeconomics and Security, has been talking about this topic at the forum, and she joins me now, fresh from her keynote. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics, Isabelle.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for inviting me.
Anecdotally, we seem to hear more about exports being restricted or tariffs applied on national security grounds. Are these just anecdotes, or is this a trend in the data?
No, we start seeing both the policies in action in the data and the consequences as well. So one example of these policies are policies that are restricting exports on the ground of geopolitical concerns or national security. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing in the data a number of countries that have been implementing those, which now cover maybe half or even more of their global exports. So this is really real for the US, for China, obviously, but also for countries like Japan and Europe that are directly at threat of economic coercion. And the second way we are seeing this already is that the geography of trade is already showing some form of fragmentation along geopolitical lines, so more trade within geopolitical blocs and less across geopolitical blocs. Of course, this is in part the consequences of trade sanctions that are used against geopolitical enemies. But the data on trade already show some evidence of this type of fragmentation.
So what are the big examples of who's using this policy, these restrictions?
To a large extent, we can see the liberation day tariff as a form of use of trade dependence for economic power. So in particular, if you listen to the motives for some of those tariffs, the geopolitical purposes are clearly explicitly stated. So take the tariffs on Brazil. It's been justified on the ground of Brazilian authority not treating well former President Bolsonaro.
Brazil has been a horrible trading partner in terms of tariffs. This is really a political execution that they're trying to do with Bolsonaro. I think that's terrible. Now they're being charged 50% tariffs and they're not happy, but that's the way it goes.
This is clearly not a tariff that is meant to achieve any economic outcome. China has been using economic coercion quite openly. So maybe for us, the most striking example is when they banned Lithuanian products from entering their market after Lithuania has opened an office of the Taiwanese representative in Vilnius.
Their relationship has upset Beijing. It was particularly angry when Taiwan opened a representative office, a de facto embassy, in Lithuania's capital, Vilnius. And there have been a string of retribution ever since.
And actually, it led to the creation of this EU anti-coercion instrument. So countries do realize that they're already exposed to economic coercion and they need to do something against this.
Yes, I was going to ask you that. Does this then get a corresponding defensive reaction?
Yeah, so at the other side of the spectrum, we see a number of countries that are already calling for more instruments to reduce their vulnerabilities to what they call often supply chain disruptions or directly to economic coercion. Around the G7, we've heard that Germany is not supporting France in its call for new EU instruments to push for more diversification in trade, less vulnerabilities, which is basically saying we need to be aware that we are exposed to some disruption or economic coercion pressures through our trade relationships, and we need to have specific dedicated instruments to reduce those exposure.
When we see coercion like this, is there an economic cost there must be for the weaker party?
Oh, there is for sure. We think of trade integration as an engine of economic efficiency. This is pushing specialization. So when you're reducing trade integration by decoupling from your geopolitical enemies, by definition, you're losing on the economic side. to eventually gain on the geopolitical side. So this is really a kind of very clear and intuitive trade-off. What we don't necessarily know very well is how we should think about this trade-off quantitatively. So how big the loss in economic efficiency and how big the benefits in terms of geopolitical concerns. And this is a very tricky question for trade economists because we don't really have the tools to make up the number around those type of trade-offs.
Is it time for economics to focus more on the consequences for the world economy of great power rivalry? That's the question we asked Christophe Terebesch and Catherine Moore in May 2025. Listen to our episode, What is Geoeconomics?, to hear their opinions on how economists should collaborate with other disciplines to fill these important gaps in our knowledge. Find this episode and all our back catalogue wherever you get your podcasts.
One thing that you were talking about today, conflict and the likelihood of conflict. When countries are trading, does this give them the incentive to avoid conflict with each other?
I think a lot of people were thinking that way, and it goes back at least to Montesquieu, if you read carefully yeah. L'Esprit des Lois, which I haven't done, but this particular part I have, there is an explicit preference to the fact that interdependencies between countries, which by the time were mostly trade dependencies, now we can think also about financial dependencies or dependencies around technologies, but more generally, any form of bilateral interdependence is going to increase the mutual cost for each country to engage into a conflict. And that's a source of a force that is going to strengthen diplomatic protocols. It helps countries solving their disputes diplomatically rather than by force or using military arms because of the cost of those conflicts becoming increasingly big once you start depending on your enemy for your own consumption, technology, growth, etc.
I see, but it's not an absolute guarantee, is it? Because also, at least since the time of Montesquieu and before, there has been conflict between countries.
Exactly. So it's not a very sure predictor, but in the data, there has been evidence that trade integration, and in particular bilateral trade integration, causes less conflictuality in international relations. That doesn't mean that wars no longer happen. And actually, today I was discussing about some models that we've been using with colleagues to think about why wars happen despite those very big costs of wars. And there are a number of reasons why this can be the case. But the general force is still that conditional on everything else, when you're more trade interdependent, the cost of engaging into a conflict is bigger. And so this is a force that is pushing towards less conflictuality in trade. Now, what we see as well is that although in the data, it still seems to be true, despite this, we've seen a number of countries using those trade dependencies, again, either as for economic coercion purposes or to try force their enemies or partners into some geopolitical outcomes, or instead has a way to reduce this exposure. And this is where the trade-offs that I was mentioning before are becoming even trickier because there might be some geopolitical benefits of this. So say, I'm the European Union, I'm going to pass this strategic autonomy policy that is helping reducing vulnerabilities. And this is good because in case I'm exposed to economic coercion, I'm going to be better equipped. But while this is good in terms of insurance, it's also reducing this interdependence that are helping with diplomacy. So it might backfire in the form of more conflict. And that's, I think, a trade-off that is maybe less in the mind of people and policymakers. So it's, I think, an important possibility to push back. And again, there are historical examples of this that we can discuss about.
Yes, this is what you call the safety paradox,
exactly.
Is it? Yes, where has this happened?
So one example that we thought was kind of a good example is what happened between the US and Japan during the Second World War, whereby the US imposed an export ban on oil to Japan. And a lot of people, and particular historians, are thinking about this ban as an event that has accelerated Japan's entry into the war. So basically what that means is that the policy, which was mostly based on reducing export dependence vis-a-vis Japan or imposing a cost to Japan, has fired back through Japan entering the war. This is really the rationale beyond trade sanctions. The reason why we're sanctioning countries that are not doing whatever we want is precisely because we think imposing those sanctions is going to reduce the incentive to behave badly, whatever it means. But reducing trade might also reduce the trade interdependence forces that are maintaining global safety.
At the moment, there is a great decoupling happening, the US and China. How might this play out in terms of the safety of the world?
Exactly. So that's why I thought it was an interesting or an important point to raise in this policy forum, because the world is clearly entering into this fragmentation along geopolitical lines. And again, there are good reasons why we might do this. Like this question of insurance against economic coercion is something that I believe is important. But in the meantime, we need to be careful, I think, with this safety paradox. So as a trade economist, the way I think about it is through my model. So in my model, what I'm doing is to use this diplomatic game that I briefly mentioned before to simulate what are the geoeconomic, geopolitical, and economic consequences of the US decoupling from China. And so over time, the China shock has made the US more dependent on China. And this is reducing the US bargaining power in diplomacy against China. Because again, I'm more and more dependent on you for my consumption. You're not really opening to my goods for your own consumption. So that makes our trade relationship a bit asymmetric. And this asymmetry is not good from the point of view of my diplomatic power. President Trump entering the White House, I realized that after years of opening up to China, I've lost this bargaining power in diplomacy. Maybe decoupling could be seen as a good idea. And I think these ideas have very much been fueled by the very recent US trade policy. Maybe what the US is trying to do is just to recover bargaining power in diplomacy. And there are good economic arguments for doing this. We are implementing this idea into our model. So the model has both economic and diplomatic forces. And we're just simulating a decoupling. So what if, starting in 2018, the US does what they have done, which is basically decoupling from China using unilateral tariffs. And what we show is that this has benefits in the sense that decoupling in our model is reducing the cost of a war with China for the US. And this is good both in wartime and also for diplomatic purposes. The problem is that, one, in general equilibrium, this is also going to force China to diversify away from the US for its production side. And this is also reducing the opportunity cost of the war for China. In terms of bargaining power in peacetime, the impact is neutral. You're not gaining much from this, precisely because while decoupling from China, you're also forcing China to diversify. This is reducing the probability that any dispute between the US and China is going to be settled through diplomacy. So you are increasing the probability that a war is going to happen. In our quantification, to give you a rough number, increasing tariffs by 20 percentage points, which is more or less what Trump did during his first mandate, is increasing the probability of a war happening by 2%. And 2% might not be big, but if you think about a conflict with China, which has a lot of weapons, this is something that you really don't want. And so when we put this into the model, what we see is that overall decoupling is bad for geopolitical purposes, because the main effect that is going to dominate is this safety paradox, the fact that you're reducing the probability of disputes being settled through diplomacy. This is based on a lot of assumptions, but I think it's saying something that is more general, which is that when using economic power, you tend to think mostly about what it's going to bring you in peacetime in terms of diplomatic power. As a policy leader, that seems to be the most obvious way of understanding this type of policies. But the problem is really when it starts backfiring. And here I think, especially us in Europe, who are mostly victims of these wars between US and China, we really want to think about how to best design policies that need to take into account this risk that economic coercion is posing. But also keep in mind that in general, trade is a source of insurance. And so decoupling or reducing trade integration is likely to be a source of more conflict. And this is really not something that we want.
So based on your analysis, what you're really arguing is that there is a really good case to slow down or reverse the decoupling that we're seeing, or just to not react so much to it.
Exactly. I think we should be very careful in reacting in a way that doesn't integrate the possibility of this backfiring. So what does it mean in practice? It means that there is a need for insurance because we're already exposed to economic coercion. But this insurance need, in a way, should be integrated into our trade policy tool. So that means, for instance, that when we are discussing a trade agreement, we should think a bit more systematically about the insurance benefit that our trade with those countries is going to bring to the world as a whole. This is very different from what we were doing in the old world, in which we were mostly concerned about economic efficiency, whereby we thought about trade agreements as a way to get access to new markets. And that's still true, but given the level of integration, we've already exhausted a bit most of the benefits we can expect from these trade agreements in terms of market access. What those agreements can really bring is the insurance. So, for instance, we know that China is almost a monopoly on rare earths. It's been building a very powerful industry on both the mining, the refining, the production of magnets, etc. What can we do about this? First, we can start thinking about where those rare earths could be mined and whether some of our future trade partners could be used as insurance against the economic power that this almost monopoly that China has acquired could bring in the future. And again, rare earths, I think, is a good example, or critical materials in general, because these are things that are not only mined in China. There are a lot of resources that are not within China or the US or other big economic power. So there is a possibility of diversification of our input purchases through international trade, actually much more opportunities of diversification through trade than through more mining in Europe, just because we don't have that many resources. And so thinking about this type of insurance benefit while designing trade agreements is something that I think is very important and very novel, very different from the way we were thinking about trade agreements maybe even 10 years ago.
Interesting challenge for that's coming up in September when President Xi visits the United States. We're talking about two things. What sort of substantive trade agreements might come out of it? Will he raise the future of Taiwan? What you're arguing here is basically they are two sides of the
same coin. Exactly. I think they are to a very large extent. I think policymakers know this. I mean, maybe we economists were ignoring this. But what we can still bring as economists are also quantitative tools to think about this. And I think this is needed because, again, the forces are very ambiguous. There is a need for more trade policy targeting trade vulnerabilities. But you need to design those in a very subtle way. Maybe even policymakers need some guidance about this, or at least us economists to think about these questions. We clearly need more tools and more quantification.
Isabel, it's fascinating. Thank you for talking about it.
Thank you.
If you want to read about this in a discussion paper, then CEPR discussion paper 20564, The Fragmentation Paradox, De-Risking Trade and Global Safety. Authors Thierry Meyer, Isabelle Méjean and Mathias Tonig.
Vox Talks Economics is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber and our editor is Andrei Zagarian. Next time on Vox Talks Economics, we're back at the Paris School of Economics to investigate how Europe could use industrial policy wisely to protect and grow its economy.